right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, February 12th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is partially sunny. I guess it was sunny. It's not too much now. Partly cloudy. But there's a dose of 22 degrees and light snow going on right now. So much better than it's going to be. I saw that we'll be lucky to even get above zero this weekend. I don't know if I believe that, but that's what they're saying. How is this even possible? I am so sick of winter. All right, today we are not going to dawdle or dilly-dally. Today we are going to continue where we left off. This is Jewel School on Nanotech for the last, I believe this is 4 weeks already. I hope you guys don't get tired of the subject. I know I don't, as you can obviously tell. This is something that once I get started, I can't stop because as I dig more and more, the crazier it gets. Remember yesterday we talked about that NYU researcher that had a little nanobot they're calling a nanowalker. It's a two-legged walking object. And I don't think we ever really found out what the nanowalker is supposed to do. But I did some research into the nanowalker after the show yesterday, and it appears that they've been messing with creating that nanowalker since at least 1999. So it really is kind of a horrifying thought to think here in 2015, how much further they could possibly be. Many people, when you talk about this stuff to them, kind of roll their eyes back and go, you've just been watching too many science fiction movies. And, back maybe 30 or 40 years ago, that was true. I don't believe so anymore. I want to kick this off again with New World Order Shill. I used to really, really enjoy him until he started talking about how awesome it's going to be merging man and machine, and we should just give up because they're going to be smarter than us anyway. But Michio Kaku, I mean, I literally, the day that I realized that he was selling the promise of everything that I am absolutely against, and that is killing biological life, becoming this next evolution of human, partially biologic, eventually no longer biologic and all synthetic. That's the key. I mean, once you become fully synthetic, you're no longer bound by earthly limits for lifetimes, let's say, and hence the immortality project by all of these high-tech companies that are out there and the rich, and that's where all the funding is coming from, them and DARPA and our National Institutes of Health, the Brain Project. I mean, don't think that all of this, everything that I talk about here is absolutely 100% connected. All right, let me see if this is going to give me a chance. And we are.
For lifetimes, let's say.
Hold on. Now, I thought I double checked, but this is going to suck if I somehow have something open that I can't find. And I got to tell you, I have lots and lots and lots of windows open. But you know what? I'm just going to have to kill chat just in case. All right, let's see. Let's see if we could do this again. Aha! All right, here we go. So this is Michio. This was from last year, talking about 2045, and that's also the Russian millionaire has his 2045 project, and maybe we'll look at him as well. He's another crazy going for immortality and putting his money behind it. Michio Kaku, 2014. By 2045, digital immortality may be a reality. He talks about a bunch of different technologies in this. This is from November 18th. Hold on, we have a commercial. La la la. All right, here we go. Skip.
And here with us now is co-founder of the string field theory, professor of theoretical physics at the City College and City University of New York, Dr. Michio Kaku. He's the author of The Future of the Mind, the scientific quest to understand, enhance, and empower the mind. Doctor, it's great to have you here. It's amazing to think, and as we see in that film Her, and the question that Samantha, played by Scarlett Johansson, posing, is this real or programming? That type of scenario we're not that far off from, and that's what you explore with this book. Explain to us where we are in the understanding of the brain.
Well, Hollywood gets it first, right? But remember the movie The Matrix, when you push a button, become a karate master, or Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where memories are simply put into mind? We're on the border now, the brink, the threshold of initiating all these wondrous things. Think about it. Telepathy, reading minds, telekinesis, moving objects with the mind, uploading memories, even photographing a dream. These are things that are being done in the laboratory today, not tomorrow.
Well, when we look at movies like I, Robot or Eagle Eye, or these films that have such high-tech scenarios that are playing out, it seems as if the human experience is totally lost to then this technology that takes over control. So what is our fail-safe as we continue to explore, continue to learn? Is there a fail-safe to protect us from our own advances?
Well, when you watch movies like I, Robot, you think that robots are going to take over and they're going to put us in zoos and throw peanuts at us as we dance behind bars.
Right.
No, that's many, many decades in the future. However, what is...
Did you hear that? And the interviewer, there's a couple times when they cut back to his face and he has a really perplexed look on his face like, oh no, this couldn't maybe not be good.
What's happening now in the laboratory is that we're beginning to understand our own brain, not a robot brain, but our own brain. We're beginning to understand how memories are formed, why we have super geniuses who can do fantastic mathematical calculations in their head, and photographing your thoughts and using your thoughts to energize machines so that the mind is not going to be replaced. The mind will be interfacing with machines, controlling machines mentally.
So for generations, we have probably...
And we actually looked at some of that with the cognitive computing. There was also cognitive, I'm trying to remember what it's called. Mike, SLC Mike, had sent us a couple videos on that where they were doing a lecture, and it was pretty interesting. But they're literally, I mean, not too far here coming in the future, and I think Google Glass was like the first step of that. By the way, Google Glass has been discontinued. Is a literal interface from your brain into the computer so you can have your contact lenses, you can blink an eye. And, you know, there's a lot of that mind control stuff already coming out with the keyboards and mice that you can put that little device right over the top of your head and use brainwaves to control things.
Known more about the moon or Mars than we have known about the brain. So as you skim through this incredibly important and really interesting book, what's going to happen? What's the impact of all of this research, all of this study on things like Asperger's or Alzheimer's or cognitive issues that perhaps people are born with, brain-related cognitive issues? What happens?
President Barack Obama and the European Union have pledged over $1 billion. That's billion with a B, not an M. $1 billion on the next big thing after the Human Genome Project, and that is the Brain Initiative.
Okay. Now, I've been talking about this for a while, but tell me if that is not one of the scariest things you have ever heard. Obama pledged a billion taxpayer dollars to the Brain Project. And remember, all of this is connected. This is our next generation of an economy, this precision medicine. This is what it's all about. The Brain Project is just one piece. Nanotechnology is another piece, but they're all connected. It is taking over the biological organism.
To sequence and map the entire human brain. I mean, think about it. We'll be able to understand what is schizophrenia, what is bipolar disorder, mental illness. That's going to be the short term. Even farther down the line is having a brain pacemaker for people with Alzheimer's disease. We are not understanding how memories are being formed. So why not create memories that are useful for people suffering from Alzheimer's? That's called the brain pacemaker. And the first memory was inserted into a mouse last year. That's how path-breaking and how fast this is moving. And think about this. If we have a memory stored on a disk with all your neural networks on it, and it will live after you die, meaning that just like in her, perhaps some of you will live forever. Your memories, your personality, your goals, your dreams will live in a computer. And perhaps your great-great-great-great-great-grandkids will have a conversation with you long after you're dead.
It's very interesting. Doctor, I want to send you down to Cokie Roberts, our panelist in D.C., with a question.
I don't know what happened to Cokie. Oh, no, Cokie. I don't know. The video's sitting here spinning now. Well, that's okay. We don't have to listen to any more of this unless it comes back. But let me hit that echo. Anyway, so he's talking about, yes, being able to upload yourself, put all your memories. I mean, we looked at a whole bunch of that a few days ago. That's something that makes me think of quite a number of TV shows over the years where they had, you know, heads or minds, brains in jars that you could access. Here's something that I wanted to talk about. This is the 2045 initiative. I mentioned this a few times. This is out of Live Science. The singularity is near. Mind uploading by 2045. This was pretty much what Michio was just talking about. By 2045, humans will achieve digital immortality by uploading their minds to computers, or at least that's what some futurists think. Now, listen to Michio. I mean, he says we're right on the money, man. We're getting there. And actually, if this once this loads, we'll play the rest of it, because that's kind of the stuff he talks about, are all the advances that they already have going now. This notion has formed the basis for the Global Future 2045 International Congress, a futuristic conference held in June. The conference, which is the brainchild of Russian millionaire Dmitry Itzkov. Yes, he is the Russian millionaire that wants to live forever. And actually, if I remember, he came out in the very beginning, and it was almost like a competing idea to Ray Kurzweil, because Ray wants to upload himself to the computer. But when I was reading this Dmitry's original plan, he was literally talking about taking your brain and implanting it into a synthetic device such as a robot. Now, I don't know. They've all merged together now as groups, so I don't know if maybe they convinced him that's not such a good idea or what the deal is. But anyway, any of it is horrifying to me. It says, the conference, which is the brainchild of Russian multimillionaire Dmitry Itzkov, fell somewhere between hardcore science and science fiction. It featured a diverse cast of speakers from scientific luminaries or whack jobs, Ray Kurzweil, Peter Diamandis, and Marvin Minsky, to swamis and other spiritual leaders. And remember, you know, if you search Kurzweil, there's actually a lot that he speaks about with spirituality and the singularity. And, you know, I was mentioning that my daughter asked me the other night if they can actually print bodies yet. And as a matter of fact, there was a story that just came out last night about that. But that's one of the concerns, and I even pointed that out to her. I mean, the thing is, and I mean, for many years I've postulated this, even if they could create an entire Frankenstein body of organs and components, will you have consciousness without whatever makes us human? You know what I'm saying? I mean, who knows? Who knows? It'll be very interesting to see once they get to that point. I mean, is it going to be like Frankenstein where they take some high voltage electricity, they zap the heart and it's alive? Or is there something lacking that will prevent it from being alive? Is there some sort of quote unquote life force or energy that actually makes us alive, not just the elements that make up our body? So it's interesting that at this millionaire, billionaire, live forever immortality conference that they actually had swamis and spiritual leaders as well. Kurzweil, an inventor, futurist, and now director of engineering at Google, predicts that in 2045, technology will have surpassed human brain power to create a kind of super intelligence. an event known as the singularity. Other scientists have said that robots will overtake humans by 2100. You know, there's another thing, too. After the show, I started to dig and I found some older stories that I had read that people have probably forgotten about. But also, Google is working on their synaptic computer that is using, mimicking the human brain for thoughts. And who the hell knows what they're using it for? We'll maybe take a look at that. I want to definitely, though, dig into nanotech and food and nanotech and medicine. And but immortality has a lot to do with that. According to Moore's Law, and that's the law I was trying to remember the other day, half brain dead before my coffee. Computing power doubles approximately every 2 years. Several technologies are undergoing similar exponential advances, from genetic sequencing to 3D printing. Ding, 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 ding. Kurzweil told conference attendees. He illustrated the point with a series of graphs showing an inexorable upward climb of various technologies. You know, I look at Kurzweil with fascination and amazement, the way I look at a gory, mangled car accident. You know, I find the man very intriguing, and his ideas and all of these futuristic visions he outlays. I mean, one thing that I've always been able to do in my life, which is why I was good at doing what I did for a living before I started doing this, was seeing the future. Okay. I have this ability to just see lots of timelines and pick the two or three that are probably most probable. It's why I did executive business. That's what I was good at, was coming up with future trends. But I'm telling you, people, everything that I see here in these future trends are like every dystopian nightmare I've ever had. And it's not just my crazy fantasy anymore. You know, I used to think about this stuff as a kid, too. I told you I was a sci-fi buff. You know, you'd watch these and go, oh, thank God, that's not us. Well, it is now. And Kurzweil is like leading the pack. Kurzweil and Google and DARPA, doo-doo. By 2045, based on conservative estimates of the amount of computation you'll need to functionally simulate a human brain, we'll be said to be able to expand the scope of our intelligence, quote, a billionfold, says Kurzweil. Itzkoff and other so-called transhumanists interpret this impending singularity as digital immortality. Specifically, they believe that in a few decades, humans will be able to upload their minds to a computer, transcending the need for a biological body. So it sounds to me like they convinced Itzkoff that it's probably better to upload your memories to the computer versus trying to insert a biological brain that'll eventually wear out and decay into a robot body. That is, in the very beginning, when I first read about Itzkoff, that's what he was talking about. And I remember reading that on the WTF show we used to have, because I was like, this cannot be real, but it is. But it looks like they convinced him otherwise. So, phew. The idea sounds like sci-fi, and at least it is for now. The reality, however, is that neural engineering, and we looked at some of that yesterday as well, is making significant strides toward modeling the brain and developing technologies to restore and replace some of its biological functions. And if, where is it? Where did Michio go? Aha. If Michio plays now, I think he will. It looks like it's all loaded. Let's, that's what they're talking about next. Oh, hold on. Skype has issues. Here we go. All right.
Doctor, those of us of a certain age want to know about this memory pill that you are that you talk about in the book and say that it could be sooner rather than later. How soon, please?
First of all, we are creating forgetful pills now, not tomorrow, right now, for people with traumatic experiences like wartime injuries. And we're beginning to understand now the memory process. For example, there are many instances where some people get hit on the left side of their head and become a super mathematical genius. This is something right out of the comic books, but it's well documented. And after this program, for God's sake, do not hit yourself on the left side of your head.
Barnacle clock, man.
Trying to become a super genius after the show is over.
Well, what about seizures? People suffer epileptic seizures, brain seizures. What's that in the study about that?
For example, people with Parkinson's who shake uncontrollably, you can actually see that there's a part of the brain in a brain scan that's overactive, that lights up. We can put a probe directly into that part of the brain and nullify it, quiet that part of the brain.
Now?
Now. This is today. This is one of the standard ways of treating Parkinson's disease. Also, people who are clinically depressed and have resisted psychotherapy and psychiatry and psychology, brain scans reveal that certain parts of the brain, again, are overactive. By putting tiny little needles into the brain painlessly, you can quiet that area. And I've seen videotapes where a person is suicidal one instant and the next instant, joy and tremendous vigor coming into that person's face. So,
now, that's got to concern everyone. So they discovered if they insert tiny little needles into the left side of your brain, we could take someone who's clinically depressed, which, by the way, has now been included in DSM-5. Oh, I think there's many that have been included in DSM-5, but clinical depression, oppositional defiance disorder, all these different types of psychological disorders that are now in this manual. And remember, depression was also something that once they gave you SSRIs, and how many, 60, 70 million Americans are on some sort of mood-enhancing drug because of problems with depression? I mean, millions of little needles inserted into your brain is going to be our future? I don't think so. Thank you very much. Next thing, it's going to be the little nanobots inserting needles and stimulating your brain.
Amazing what you can do, because we're now beginning to unravel the human thinking process.
It's incredible advances ahead of us. Doctor, it's great to have you here. The book is called The Future of the Mind. You can read an excerpt on our site, mojo.msnbc.com. Dr.
Every time I hear Michio, like I said, I used to be a big fan of his, and I see he just released a brand new video. We might have to hit this later, titled Michio Kaku 2015, The Future of Nanotechnology. You know, the scary thing is that Michio sees it. I mean, he works at the City University of New York. He's pretty close to a lot of the research on the East Coast, MIT, Harvard, NYU. You know, the dude is a world-renowned physicist and futurist, so you better believe he knows what's going on. The sad fact of the matter is he's writing books about it, and he's cashing in, cha-ching, on all of his books talking about this dystopian future, but he's trying to convince us that's a good thing. Every time I've seen him on a science show in the last year plus, well, since Fukushima, since the show that he came out, and he might have been on CNN at that time, when they asked him what he thought about Fukushima, and he said that we were a roller coaster going down a curvy road without brakes, holding on by our fingernails. And after that, Michio shut up. He disappeared for about a year. You didn't see anything else out of him. And the next thing you know, he comes out and all he's talking is New World Order shill. You know, so he disappoints me greatly. But anyway, so getting back to this 2045 project, which is pretty much what all of this encompasses. So they already have cures for Alzheimer's that they're working on, this happy little pill. Of course, your biopharma industry, precision medicine, they're all going to make all kinds of money on augmenting us. That's what it was called, augmented reality, Mr. SLC. They want to be able to insert things. Did you hear him saying that it'll be like the Matrix where we could just plug our brains in? I mean, at some point, I see how that's very possible, especially if our brains are all connected in some sort of hive capacity for a biological supercomputer. And at some point, technology is going to overtake us, according to Kurzweil, 2045. But the thing is that a computer brain is blank. It's like a blank hard drive. And we have lifetimes worth of memories, experiences, emotions, interactions between all of us. There's such a massive store of information that it's going to take that long for them to catch up, I think. But once they are able to mimic humans completely, there isn't going to be much else needed unless they use us to generate energy. I had a friend who had a theory about that years ago, and there have been some technologies now that have come out in the last few years that lead me to believe that maybe we will be batteries at some point. All right, let's continue a little bit more. This story on 2045, talking about transhumanism. The next section is brain prostheses. Substantial achievements have been made in the field of brain-computer interfaces, or also called BCIs. And remember, DARPA was working on a lot of this to save our poor injured soldiers. And that's where a lot of this research is happening now. And please, for not even one moment, don't believe that this is for the good of us, okay? Because it's not. It's not to help save our injured veterans. Our injured veterans and us coming here very shortly. I mean, it's already happening, but more so in the future, we are all becoming full-out guinea pigs, and we will be willful guinea pigs when they promise us a cure for cancer and immortality. This brain-computer interface, first one is the cochlear implant, in which the brain's cochlear nerve is electronically stimulated to restore a sense of sound to someone who's hard of hearing. This was the first true BCI. Many groups are now developing BCIs to restore motor skills following damage to nervous systems from a stroke or spinal cord injury. And you know what makes me so sick is that while they're working on this technology and they're offering it to people who are desperate and injured, what do you think their answer's going to be? And I mean, and if it were you, put yourself in those shoes. I mean, if it were you and you had no quality of life, would you risk your life to maybe fix some things, to be a pioneer, to be one of the first? You might. But it's disturbing to me that they're almost preying on these people. They're easy targets to further their agenda. Because in the end, like I said, this is not going to be for you and me. Okay? Look at our economy. Look at the healthcare system. Look at the concerns with precision healthcare. It's the promise to help fix us all, to make us immortal so we never get sick, to customize treatments for everyone's individual genetic defects. But it's going to cost you $300,000 a treatment. I mean, that's unsustainable. So unless you have bazillions of dollars, it's not for us. It's for when they go running off to Mars or to Europa. Did you see now they're sending a probe to Europa? Because they're pretty sure that's all water under the ice. Or to whatever new planet, exoplanet they found that they think will sustain life. I mean, that's where they're going. That's why DARPA, back many years already, has been messing around with suspended animation. And I mean, that's all documented. We looked at all that. You know, they've even used it on football players, where they cool the body temperature down. As soon as you get a spinal cord injury, they drop you into a bucket of ice. So it slows all your biological processes down. And they've actually managed to save a few people's cognitive abilities. That was that Gabby Giffords. They did that to her. I think it was a Buffalo Bill that they also tried that on, the injury that actually saved his spinal cord so he didn't end up a paraplegic. And they've been working on that stuff for a long time. And now with this brain project, and I mean, I can't even believe it's $1 billion taxpayer dollars. And remember, this isn't just the federal government. This is corporations, biomedical, biopharma, universities, and tech corporations all over the world that are working on this together. The human brain is the last bastion of freedom. And Michio said they'll be able to take pictures of your thoughts. We saw something about a year ago where they already could read your dreams. Jose Carmina and Michael Marlbitz, and electrical engineers at the University of California, Berkeley, are working to develop state-of-the-art motor BCIs, brain-computer interfaces. These devices consist of pill-sized electrode arrays that record neural signals from the brain's motor areas, which are then decoded by a computer and used to control a computer cursor or a prosthetic limb. And we've seen some of those tests already. Of course, they're using them on veterans. Carmina and Marlbitz spoke of challenges of making a BCI that works stably over time and does not require being tethered to wires. Theodore Berger, a neural engineer at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, is taking BCIs to a new level by developing a memory prosthesis. Oh, how nice. We'll be able to just plug in another flashcard. Berger aims to replace part of the brain's hippocampus. Well, it's not going to be mine. I'm not stepping up for this one. The region that converts short-term memories into long-term ones with a BCI. The device records the electrical activity that encodes a simple short-term memory, such as pressing a button, and converts it to a digital signal. That signal is passed into a computer where it is mathematically transformed and then fed back into the brain where it gets sealed in as a long-term memory. He has successfully tested this device on rats and monkeys, and he is now working with human patients. Next section, mind uploading. The conference took a surreal turn when Martine Rothblatt, a lawyer, author, and entrepreneur, and CEO of a biotech company, United Therapeutics Corp., took the stage. Even the title of Rothblatt's talk was provocative. Quote, "The purpose of biotechnology is to end death," unquote. Rothblatt introduced the concepts of mind clones, digital versions of humans that can live forever. She described how mind clones are created from a mind file, a sort of online repository of our personalities, which she argues humans already have in the form of Facebook, for example. This mind file will be run on Mindware, a kind of software for consciousness. She says the first company that develops Mindware will have as much success as thousands of Googles. But would such a mind clone be alive? Rothblatt thinks so. She cited one definition of life as a self-replicating code that maintains itself against disorder. Well, then, under that definition, I'm going to say self-replicating nanobots that we've been hearing about over the last couple weeks would be considered alive. Some critics have shunned what Rothblatt called spooky Catharsian dualism, arguing that the mind must be embedded in biology. On the contrary, software and hardware are as good as wetware or biological materials, she argued. Rothblatt went on to discuss the implications of creating mind clones. Continuity of the self is one issue because your persona would no longer inhabit just a biological body. Then there are mind clone civil rights, which would be the cause célèbre for the 21st century, Rothblatt said. Even mind clone procreation, what? And reanimation after death were mentioned. Ah, that's me running away screaming. The quantum world, this is the last section, in parallel with the talk of brain technologies and mind uploading, much was said about the nature of consciousness in the universe. Physicist Roger Penrose of the University of Oxford and others disagree with the interpretation of the brain as a mere computer. Penrose argued that consciousness is a quantum mechanical phenomenon. And mind you, once you get into the nano realm, laws of physics in this realm do not exist. We're actually stepping into the quantum realm. That's why quantum computing is so important. Penrose argued that consciousness is a quantum mechanical phenomenon arising from the fabric of the universe. Those of the Penrose school think uploading the brain would have to involve quantum computers. Hey, beep, 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 beep. A development unlikely to happen by 2045. Well, glad they said that. They are working on it now, though. Don't think that they're not. Itzkoff thinks otherwise. The 32-year-old president of the Global Future 2045 conference is dead set on living forever. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Pretty frightening. According to Wikipedia, the 2045 Initiative is a nonprofit organization that develops a network and community of researchers in the field of life extension. It was founded by Russian entrepreneur Dmitry Itzkoff in February 2011 with the participation of Russian specialists in the field of neural interfaces, robotics, artificial organs and systems. The main goal of 2045, as stated on its site, is to, quote, create technologies enabling the transfer of an individual's personality to a more advanced non-biological carrier and extending life, including to the point of immortality. We devote particular attention to enabling the fullest possible dialogue between the world's major spiritual traditions, science, and society. Future prospects. The 2045 Initiative has a roadmap for developing cybernetic immortality. The initiative has the goal for an avatar controlled by a brain-computer interface to be developed. This is what I was telling you guys. This was his original plan. To be developed between 2015 and 2020. And then between 2020 and 2025, creating an autonomous life support system for the human brain linked to a robot. Between 2030 and 2035, creating a computer model of the brain and the human consciousness with which means to transfer into an artificial carrier. And then by 2045, to create a new era for humanity with bodies far exceeding ordinary humans. So guys, that's what it was about. That RT clip about human DNA and humans being so different in the next 30 years. Do you realize that is only 30 years from now? 30 years from now, I'm going to be an old lady. But hopefully I'll still be alive. But I don't know if... Do we really want to be uploaded? Then there's the Avatar Project. One of the featured life extension projects is to design an artificial humanoid body called an avatar and an advanced brain-computer interface system. On the biological side, a life support system will be developed for hosting a human brain inside the avatar and maintaining it alive and functional. That was Dmitry's vision. A later phase of the project will research into the creation of an artificial brain into which the original individual consciousness may be transferred. There are four avatars. Avatar A is a robotic copy of a human body remotely capable of interpreting commands directly from the mind and sending information back to the mind in a form that can be interpreted via the brain-computer interface. It is estimated to be popularized in or before 2020. Avatar B, an avatar, and remember, they're probably going to perfect these technologies on brain-injured soldiers. Mark my words. Avatar B, an avatar in which the human brain is transplanted at the end of one's life. Avatar B has an autonomous system providing life support for the brain and allowing an interaction with the environment, possibly mounted into an existing Avatar A chassis. Oh my God. Deadline of this phase is the year 2025. That is 10 years from now. Avatar C, an avatar with an artificial brain in which a human personality is transferred to and emulated in at the end of one's life. The first successful attempt to upload one's personality to a computer is estimated to happen around 2035. And then Avatar D is a hologram-like avatar. It is the ultimate goal of this project, but is optional since biological diseases are prevented in the previous phase, assuming either the upload is involuntary or that all humans choose to upload, and it is far away from the current technological achievements and our understanding on physics. But remember, the brand new Windows 10, you know, I was just talking about this yesterday, one of the founders, now of course we all know about Bill Gates being a globalist. I'm sure that he is involved in a lot of different things on the back end. I mean, he's working on the whole eugenics plan, but Paul Allen, I believe, who is another founder of Microsoft, also has an immortality project up in Seattle. There's a lot of them, trust me. The hologram, though, I just saw in Windows 10, the coming new version, they've integrated holograms into the operating system. I don't know, probably maybe 6 months or so ago. There was also a video that Pigmine uploaded, and I know, say what you will about the Holocaust, but their example of being able to use artificial intelligence within holograms is that they had a Holocaust survivor that they had done all kinds of interviews with, asking him questions about his entire life and things that happened and whatever, and it was all saved to a computer with the man's image, with him talking, all in hologram. And the video, I'll have to see actually if I can find that maybe for tomorrow. The video had an entire classroom of children talking to this hologram, asking him, it seemed to be unrehearsed questions that this hologram was answering on the fly about his life and what had happened. And I think they were going to be putting that into the Holocaust Museum. And again, like I said, whatever your beliefs are about the Holocaust, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. All I'm saying is there are already some sort of betas out there that they're messing around with. All right. Let's hit my page quick because time is already getting short. We're going to have to figure something out here. I want to talk about this for 1 second, and then maybe we're going to hit Michio Kaku's 2015 interview about nanotech. This is getting back to about printing organs that my daughter had asked me about. And yes, as a matter of fact, a story just came out yesterday in a university publication titled Synthetic DNA, Synthetic DNA Gel Points the Way to Printing Artificial Organs. A two-part water-based gel made of synthetic DNA could bring the Harriet Watt inventors of a 3D bioprinter closer to being able to print organs for transplant or to replace animal testing. The Harriet Watt team, led by Professor Rory Duncan, head of the Institute's Biological Chemistry, Biophysics, and Bioengineering Department, and Will Hsu, also of the IB3 at the University School of Engineering and Physical Sciences, faced two major challenges: finding a matrix or a scaffold to support the live cells in 3D, and being able to produce a consistent product which would not be rejected by transplant recipients. Now, maybe it's just me. They have been working on this for a long time. I know that they found a scaffold of some sort of biological sugar, worked very well, and they were using stem cells. And originally the stem cells were fetal stem cells, but then they discovered that they could actually use your own skin cells, that then they could create stem cells, and those stem cells would then create whatever types of bodily cells they needed. And the best part about using your own skin cells is that they wouldn't be rejected because they were your own bodily cells. I'm sure, though, it's not that easy. I mean, I'm making it sound easy, and reading an article about it is a lot different than doing it. I'm just saying this has actually been going on for quite a while, but it looks like they're getting quite a bit closer. I'm not going to read this whole thing because it's kind of long, and I want to get to the rest of at least one or two more things that I wanted to touch on. The new gel, in combination with our delicate 3D printing system, which does not involve heat, UV, salt, or other harsh conditions to make the printed 3D object set, we have been able to demonstrate can produce a three-dimensional matrix containing highly viable live cells. Most importantly, working with the wider team led by Professor Duncan, we have also run specialized imaging tests to prove that the cells we used remained alive and functional at a subcellular level after this process was complete. Now, to me, if they could literally print organs for transplant, how awesome would that be? They wouldn't have to be killing animals or taking them out of dead people. But again, this makes us gods, guys. I don't know if the human race is morally capable of being gods. Literally, we are able to create life. And with all the good comes 10,000 times the evil that's out there and the misuse that can happen with these technologies. All right, let's kick this last clip because I really want to hear what Michu has to say in 2015 about nanotech. And I'm going to start it off right there tomorrow. I promise. Hold the phone. Skype is trying to connect. I don't know what this new incredibly irritating issue is. Okay, here we go. The future of nanotechnology, according to New World Order. Shall meet you, Kaku.
Far term, we have to realize that if robots become more sophisticated, more intelligent, there is a chance that they could become very, very superior to us, in which case we should think about merging with them.
Oh, well, I guess. See, these people lied because that's one from 2014. I played this for us already a couple days ago. They're titling that this is 2015. So good. All right. Well, let's get back then to one or two other things that we wanted to talk about. Google has launched their immortality project. I mentioned that. We listened to a clip from Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. It is called Calico. Sounds as if the folks at Google are doing a search of their own for immortality. Google announced it was forming a new subsidiary company known as Calico that will focus on health and well-being, in particular challenges of aging and associated diseases. I am actually thinking that Calico is probably a part of the Google Life and Health Sciences project. So read up on Calico. Here also, something else that we're going to need to look at is DARPA's Living Foundry project. That's something that we talked about many times, but we never dug into. And that is the actual engineering of synthetic biology as if it were just programming language. I had mentioned yesterday DARPA having bodily systems all on individual chips and connected to a computer now. They're using it to test drugs. And I actually found that post. This was from December of 2013. DARPA Microphysiological Systems. DARPA seeks in vitro platforms comprised of human tissue constructs that will accurately assess efficiency, toxicity, and pharmacokinetics in a way that is relevant to humans and suitable for regulatory review. Hold on. We're going to pop to that page. page I requested is not found on DARPA any longer, which is nice. But here, basics, materials, and biological sciences, I'm sure that's where it's filed under. The Defense Science Office. You know, there's also at DARPA a biological technology office now called the BTO. Broad agency announcement. This was May 1st of 2014. The Biological Technology Division out of DARPA. The mission of the BTO is to foster, demonstrate, and transition breakthrough fundamental research discoveries and applications that integrate biology, engineering, computer science, mathematics, and the physical science to expand the national security toolkit. BTO's investment portfolio goes far beyond life science applications in medicine to include areas of research such as human-to-machine interfaces, microbes as production platforms, and deep exploration of impact of evolving ecologies and environments on U.S. readiness and capabilities. The BTO's programs operate across a wide range of scales, from individual cells to warfighter to global ecosystems. BTO responds to the urgent and long-term needs of the Department of Defense and addresses national security priorities. This is the dark side, people. And this is who's going to control these technologies. Not the doctors that are trying to build a liver to transplant in some child. The overarching goal is to develop, demonstrate, and transition biological-based technologies as a part of the toolkit available for DARPA stakeholders. I just, when I read this stuff, I can't even, I don't know even how we could fight this. One last thing, I dug into the Weiss Institute, the home of the RoboBees, the home of nano manufacturing, unmanned aerial micro vehicles, and let's talk about what they're doing over there. Their division under emerging science. Bioengineering transformed medicine in the last century by applying engineering principles and methods to solve biomedical problems. Now remember, robo bees are going to be used to pollinate crops since all the bees are dying. I have lots of theories on why the bees are dying, but I'm sure it has something to do with RNAi technology. Tomorrow we're also going to look at some of the research of the genie being out of the bottle in nature and some of the major concerns to biological systems. They're also going to use robo bees for surveillance. Specifically, it says that. And that's on Harvard's website. But engineering, biology, medicine, and physical sciences are currently undergoing a paradigm shift owing to the recent revolutionary advances in each of these fields. They are beginning to converge in unexpected ways. Developments in nanotechnology, genetics, and cell engineering now allows us to manipulate individual atoms, genes, molecules, and cells one at a time and to create artificial biological systems. At the same time, progress in material science, stem cell biology, and tissue engineering enables scientists to use synthetic materials, microdevices, and computational strategies to manipulate cell function, guide tissue formation, and control complex organ physiology. As a result, the boundary between living and non-living systems is beginning to break down. These developments have led to an emergence of the new field of, quote, biologically inspired engineering, unquote, which is the culmination of this unification of life sciences with engineering and physical sciences that is leading to an even deeper understanding of how life works. biologically inspired engineering applies biological principles to develop new engineering solutions for medicine, as well as for non-medical fields never before touched by the biology revolution. Insights into how living systems form and function using self-assembling nanomaterials, complex networks, non-linear dynamic control, and self-organizing behaviors may lead to an entirely new engineering principle that will feed back to produce revolutionary changes in many fields of human endeavor. At Weiss, we focus on the following three core research areas that comprise this new emerging field of bio-inspired engineering. One is biological control. Biological control. Number two, living materials. And number three, synthetic biology. WYSS.harvard.edu is their page. You can also plug in RoboBees and Harvard into Google, and you will find the project. A lot of their nature-inspired engineering of these new synthetic life forms are coming out of the Weiss Institute. And we should be paying very, very close attention to them. All right, guys. Well, we managed to whack out another hour, and I still didn't get to what I wanted to get to. That is starting first thing tomorrow. I am not going to get derailed. Okay, everybody have an awesome Thursday. It's already Thursday. One more day until Friday. Make sure you stick around. Kevin Blanche is live up next. We have Mr. Jack Blood simulcasting live at 3 p.m. Chuck Ocelli at the Ocelli Effect live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Hal Anthony's Behind the Woodshed from this week at 8. Double Cross Radio with Drew and Chuck at 10 p.m. And Anti-Media with S.M. Gibson and Diedrich Young at 11. All right, guys, everyone have a great Thursday. We will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.